2-8.
Okay. When I sit down and thought about what to talk about the development of the West German peace movement, I first thought it would be reasonable to begin in the year 1870, the time there was war between Germany and France. And then I wrote down all the keywords. I wrote them down in German and did a practice, told Evelyn what I was going to say, and it lasted about 3 hours. So well, that doesn't work. And so I decided, I start with the Second World War, with the end of the Second World War, and I'll try to do it in less than 1 hour. You must tell me if it gets anything too boring or if it gets too laboriously to listen to my English, just tell me. And what I would suggest, if it's possible, try and ask questions after I've finished. And because that makes it easier for me to talk. But ask questions if you don't understand my language or if questions are necessary for the comprehension and of the context. Good. And just to start about my personal experience, how I got involved in all that stuff and got interested in policy at all was about when I was 18. In Germany, there's a law what says that all male persons have to join the army, but there's a chance to refuse joining the army, and instead of going to the army, you have to do civil service. But to be accepted as a conscience objector, you have to pass negotiations. There's a court. They ask the questions, and when they are convinced that your conscience disobeys and your conscience and prohibits that you join the army, it's okay. If they say no, he just pretends to be a conscience objector, you're forced. And I failed in the first two negotiations, and after you have failed in the second negotiations, you are forced to join the army or they sentence you. And there is a chance of a third one, but this is a normal court case with a lawyer and judges and all stuff like this. So I went for 5 months to the army. 5 months it lasted till I had my third negotiation. I did a third negotiation too. And that time I was accepted. And for the rest of the time I had to do in civil service and I worked in old people's houses. And this was for me a so-called key experience. And I got to know what the government is going to do with you, how much they limit their individual freedom, if they just want to. Even if you don't agree and to their opinion that armies and all stuff of that is necessary. And at that time I was very much convinced of the, how you call that, pacifistic and opinion. I had read a lot of Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and about and civilian disobedience, the theory about that, and all kind of that stuff. So, and yeah, because I got to know what pressure the government puts on you, I got more and more involved in politics and more interested in politics. And just one example to show how necessary a strong peace movement at home and I think everywhere is just one example of how strongly our normal life has been militarized. And there is a rule in Germany, it's not a law yet, but it's a rule that in a case of war, and the doctors first have to take care of soldiers who are lightly wounded. Those who are heavily wounded have to wait, because first of all they want to heal the light wounded ones, because they can be used as soldiers again. And this is, yeah, for me an example how strange thoughts by officials and by our governments have become, and how necessary it is that there are social movements who try to fight back. This is just, yeah, how I personally got involved in it, and yeah, just one example of how necessary I think a peace movement in West Germany and everywhere else is. So I start now with the end of the Second World War to give a bit a historical review, because the peace movement of today, in my point of view, is only to be understood if you have a bit of an historical review that you know a bit how it has developed. But tell me when it's getting too long. After the Second World War, in this World War about 50 million people died, 6 million Jews had been killed, and people had a very strong pacifistic feeling. It's very understandable because nearly all families had lost members, that the men or children or women had been killed, and nearly all buildings, all streets, all towns had been destroyed, and the people were really very much tired of war and using any violence anymore. And right after the Second World War, there was no West German government allowed. The Allies, the Soviet Union, France, Great Britain, and the US, and yeah, did policy for a West German, or for a German government. You must say at this time still a German government, because at this time the German states haven't been divided yet. And these, and the Allies, were very much interested in disarming Germany forever. So they made a lot of laws that, for example, all the factories which had produced weapons had been destroyed, and even at that time, and not even, at that time, all the Allies still thought that there is a relationship, that there was a relationship between fascism and capitalism, so that made them, led them to the decision that all the big factories should be divided, because they saw the danger if economic power is too much concentrated in one hand. And, well, nearly all the parties which had been allowed right after the Second World War, it took quite a time till parties had been allowed again, and agreed to that. All the parties in West Germany agreed to a pacifistic policy, and yeah, didn't want to rebuild an army again. And just as a quotation of one of the, yeah, still today, leading politicians, that he's a, you call it, the governor of Bavaria, and to quote him, he said, "Those persons who take an arm in the hand again, these hands should fall off." Just to remind you that he was, 5 years later, he was the second defense minister in West Germany. And, but just, this shows, you know, how much, what kind of feeling existed in Germany at that time. But it shows, on the other hand, how fast, how quickly this atmosphere changed. And there's to be questioned, why did the atmosphere change so very quickly from a completely pacifistic opinion shared by the very big majority of the people, yeah, to the agreement of a rearmament? One reason is that the US was, so to say, the winner of the Second World War. Russia had suffered a lot. About 20 million Russian soldiers had been killed in the war. Very much of their economy had been destroyed. The same in France and Britain. But in the US, hardly been anything destroyed. They still had money. And yeah, especially the Western states depended on them. Probably if there hadn't been these care packets and the Western and the US Marshall Plan, probably many people in Germany had been starved without the help of the US. The same in France and Britain. Even they had won the war. It was a so-called, yeah, we call it a Pyrrhus War. And that they still at the bottom. They couldn't help themselves. They depended on the US. And the US was very much interested in to become world power number one. There is a quotation what Truman said during the Second World War, and that's the reason why the US only didn't join before 1942 in the war. He said, "We are looking who is going to win. If it's the Soviet Union, we go and help the Soviets to fight back fascism. If it's the fascists, if the fascists are going to win, we go and help them to fight back the Soviets." and fascism had been defeated. Now it was, in their opinion, to roll back the communist countries, especially the Soviet Union. And in this tragedy, Germany, or better to say, their areas, because I must say this too, and Germany has been divided after the Second World War into four areas. One belonged to the Soviet Union, one to the US, one to Great Britain, and one to France. And in the concept, in West Germany, or these Western areas, played a certain role in the strategy of the US to become world power number one. They wanted these areas to be united with the Western world again. And this was agreed very much by most of the parties which existed in West Germany. They agreed to this Western, to this integration in the Western world. And this integration included rearmament. In 1949, the NATO was founded, and reintegration into the Western world included joining the army. Joining the NATO. But this is a development, and I am going to describe this development, how that worked. Because even the thoughts had been made at about 1949, they hadn't been published, because there was still, what I described before, this strong pacifistic feeling. And it took till 1949. At that time, West Germany was founded, and half a year later, East Germany was founded. The German Chancellor, Adenauer, made an interview in an American newspaper called Plain Dealer, I think it's an Ohio newspaper, and in this newspaper he announced that the Germans were willing to rearm, to build up a new army. The Allies had different reactions on that offer. France didn't like that at all, because France had made enough experience with the Germans and threatening and frightening and fighting against them. That was in what I mentioned first, 1870, that was in the First World War, and that was in the Second World War again, and they were fed up with any German army again, though. But France was weak and didn't depend very much on the US, and the US, like I described, liked the German rearmament. And so, it's to be understood that this rearmament took place. The first thought had been mentioned 1949, but it took till 1955, till West Germany joined the NATO. And well, how did they explain it to the population, that this was necessary? And the main explanation was, well, we are threatened by the communist countries, and we have to defend ourselves, but we as Germans are too weak to defend ourselves alone, so we join the NATO, and the NATO represents the Western values, freedom, democracy, and so on. And therefore, if you don't want to be taken over by the communists, we have to join the army. You have to join the NATO. The so-called anti-communism, and you can say that the anti-communism became the official ideologic background of the West German state. And the majority of the population believed in that, and they agreed to that. Even some parties disagreed, but the majority, and here I've listed up the parties, the main, there are more, but these are the main parties, and these two parties backed the rearmament, the Social Democrats, and said, well, we don't like this kind of rearmament, But in general, they agreed to it too. The Greens didn't exist at that time, and the German Communist Party didn't exist to this time. There was another Communist Party, just another name, but they made the same policy, but they were forbidden in 1956. But the Communists were the only who, in principle, refused an rearmament, but they were far too weak. And the majority of these two parties agreed to it, and so the rearmament and the joining of the NATO happened in 1955. Yeah.
What changed people's... You said how the kind of politics worked and why it was... But what actually changed people's opinions in the time? You know, why did most people change from being pacifist to being in favour of...
The government and succeeded in convincing them...
Or just a propaganda campaign?
A propaganda campaign and probably two, these values, you know, and communistic values and so-called Western world values, people were far more used to Western values, you know. Everything was, what was just the touch of communists made people frightened, you know. And therefore, they very soon, and it was, in every paper, like here, the paper, when you read about Gaddafi, you think he is the devil itself, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, and that influence gives you an influence. You just can't avoid being influenced by that, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the main reason. And the economy developed rather well and rather fast in West Germany after the Second World War. And another part of the campaign was, in all this will be probably destroyed again when the communists take over. And we have to defend ourselves against the communist threat.
Do you think we started to forget about 10 years ago?
This too.
Well,
yeah, they weren't that much emotionally affected anymore. And this together, you know, made the change, so. Yeah, and there was a deal between rearmament and giving sovereignty back to the Germans, you know. And especially the US, you can say the Western allies, but to make it easier, just to say the US, they said, okay, you get your sovereignty back, that means your government can decide on its own. Till 1955 it couldn't. They always had to ask the allies whether all the laws were accepted, whether it's right or not, and so on. And when you build up an army again, you get your sovereignty back. So that was a kind of deal, sovereignty against rearmament. And for sure, all the politicians were very interested, and the population too, to be a sovereign country again, to be more or less equal to all the other countries, not to be inferior. That would mean for them, the consequences of war are finished now. Now we have done enough. Enough. We have sinned. How do you say that? We have sinned enough. Again. Yeah, we have suffered enough from the war, and basta. Now it's finished. So now we're the good guys again. So and we can join the army, and so on. And so it came in 1955, the year I was born. West Germany joins the NATO, and these NATO treaty still has consequences for nowadays and for the modern West German peace movement, because articles of this treaty say that the Western allies are allowed to have their army on West German territory. Even our government wouldn't like them, our government likes them, but just in the case they wouldn't like them, they had no chance to get rid of them. And even our government would have refused to accept Pershing 2 and cruise missiles. They couldn't have done anything, because this is a decision which is allowed to be taken by the President of the United States. So we couldn't refuse to these arms, even if they would have tried, but they haven't, you know. But the NATO treaty gives the US the right to station any weapon on West German territory what they want to. We can't refuse it if we stick to treaties and stuff like this. And this is back from 1955, so it still affects our daily life, and still affected the peace movement the modern peace movement. Against the joining of the NATO, yeah, the first so-called modern peace movement, and rose up. It was called the so-called Paulskirchenbewegung, because in the Paulskirche, that's this cathedral in Frankfurt, in 1948, and there had taken place a so-called liberal revolution. And just to go back to this name, what was rather popular in West Germany, people tried to organize to avoid joining the NATO, to avoid rearmament again. And, well, the groups of this movement were in this party, the Social Democrats, the Communists, the Unions, and the Churches, very much the same groups which belong to the peace movement nowadays. And in another parallel, the Social Democratic Party is a party that accepts our political system, and they are always afraid when there are big demonstrations, because then they think, well, that's a so-called of basis democracy, but our system is a parliamentary democracy, so our demonstrations are strikes, blockades, and stuff like this is too dangerous for our system. So they always play a so-called double role. And they took part in that movement, but on the other hand, they succeeded in keeping this movement down. That people only went on demonstrations, but didn't go on, that unions didn't go on strike, that there didn't take place any blockades and stuff like that. That's more or less the historical function what the Social Democratic Party has. That was in, just to go back a little bit, in the beginning of the First World War, it was the same. First, they had refused to give credits for that war, but then on the very end, they did. And what's always has been that there has been a lag between the leaders of the Social Democratic Party and the normal members, the so-called bases of the party. The bases has always been far more progressive than the leaders. And again, 1957, that was a time when for the first time atomic weapons were stationed on West German territory in the so-called, can say the second modern peace movement rose up, and but that was not that strong as the movement against the joining of the NATO, but it was again nearly the same groups, churches, the Social Democrats. They said, we don't want any atomic weapons on our territory. And what I forget to say, one of the articles of the NATO says that Germany forever and has agreed not to produce atomic weapons, but they can't avoid that atomic weapons are stationed on their territory. But it's even, well, they can't say whether these atomic weapons are used or not. That goes back to the President of the United States. And then the so-called unpolitical years in Germany started. That means there was a so-called economic miracle. People were rather well off. Very soon again, the time of the big meals started. People were eating and eating, getting fatter and fatter. People were traveling around. You know, it was a kind they wanted to do all the things they couldn't have done for a very long time. And they were glad to be well off. They won the World Championship in football 1958, what gave them strong confidence. We are back to power, and we are accepted by the rest of the world, and so on and so on. And well, in general, you can say these are so-called unpolitical years. And this lasted till nearly the midst of the 60s, in the time from the 1966 to 69, the so-called student revolt rose. And they were fighting against this easy life, and they were fighting for more democracy in the system. They thought, well, just to vote every 4 years, that isn't a real democracy, that's far too easy. The universities must be democratized, and all stuff like this. There were a lot of demonstrations, blockades, and there was a lot of hysterical reactions by the press and by the government. And in these demonstrations, for the first time in West Germany, a demonstrator had been shot and that was really, exciting times at that time. I can remember that my parents always said, well, these students don't know how to behave, and it's very bad with them, and the younger generation isn't like ours was, and stupid things like this. But on the other hand, these students didn't fight only for more democracy in West Germany. They got more or less aware of the fact that we, as the so-called first world, the Western industrialized countries, more or less are so well off because of the poverty. We are responsible for the poverty in the third world. They experience that our lifestyle depends very much on the cheap raw materials we get from the third world, and we sell back for very high prices. And especially at that time, as this is the background, and that led them, that's a reason for many demonstrations against the Vietnam War, and because the students in generally tried to fight an anti-imperialistic fight, and the best example for an imperialistic policy was the engagement of the US in Vietnam. And well, that caused a lot of trouble to the government because they wanted to say, we still like the Americans, we're still friendly with them, and the president, the US president always came to West Berlin. West Berlin was the focus of the student revolt, and they were always invited to see, there are the students, but you see the better Germans who still like you. And it's, again, the parallel. It's exactly the same what happened during the modern peace movement, too, that the press always said, okay, there is that minority, but they are misled, and the so-called silent majority still likes the US, and the US is that country what protects us and what is a guarantee for our freedom, and so on. What I have to add is, at that time, this time, 1966, always this party, sometimes in a correlation with the liberals, had been at power, always the chancellor had belonged to this party. In 1966, they lost the majority, and they had to make a coalition with the Social Democrat Party. And in 1969, the Social Democratic Party won the majority in the election, and now they made a coalition with the Liberals, but the Liberals just had risen and got a little bit about 5%. So the Social Democratic Party got the strongest party in West Germany. And they succeeded in reintegrating the students into their party when they were at power. And they made a lot of promises how to democratize the country and to do better social laws and stuff like this. But after about, they had been at all 8 years at power, after about 4 or 5 years, people got to know that their promises weren't much more than hot air. And this is the reason why many social movements rose up. People didn't believe in parties anymore, didn't feel represented by the parties anymore. This is one of the big reasons why the Greens got such an important role in West Germany. But before the Greens were founded, many social movements, like, for example, the women movement, the environment movement, the anti-nuclear power movement rose up, and the peace movement rose up. One of the reasons is because people were very frustrated of the policy from the Social Democrats, and that they really had lost confidence in political parties, that they came to the conclusion, either we fight for ourselves, or we try to realize our interest ourselves, nobody else does this. These parties just don't take care of what the majority of the people really want. And yeah, the basis of the Greens, which had been found about, I think it was 1976, are these social movements. And the peace movement at the beginning was just one of these movements, but within a very short period, the peace movement got the very strongest of all these
purely strategic reasons.
I think it has both functions. I think I mentioned that it has the military threat for the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you know, is there that, yeah, always the development of new arms, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The Soviet Union is forced, or thinks it's forced, to develop something similar,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, well, just shortly before we came here to the US, we have been 5 days to Moscow. Okay, that's an impression on the surface you get during 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
But when you compare lifestyle in Moscow and you compare Western lifestyle, you know, and they really need all the money very badly to improve their economic, you know, they hardly can, you know, any money left for military stuff, you know. Otherwise, it will happen to them that their population won't agree to their government anymore. They can't afford it to spend all the money on military stuff.
Because they're too frustrated, you said they have a car, you know, every 12 times they have a car, and
right.
I want the car too, but they can't spend the money on it. So.
And if you think, and you were saying earlier, if you think that if the German people had been told that, then Cruz and Pershing wouldn't be there now.
Mm-hmm.
Say it again.
You seem to be saying earlier that where the peace movement had failed is that they hadn't told the people that this was why the weapons were there, that this was why Cruz and Pershing, and you think that if the people had been told about the economics of it, that the weapons likely wouldn't be there now.
And I think I must mention this too. What I stressed out is the opinion of such a small minority, you know, and it's just like nothing, you know.
But is
and we don't have any influence. And what I'm saying, that's so much against the normal system we have in West Germany, and the majority in West Germany thinks our political system is good, you know. They're so much used to that, and they're so much used to believe in what a government says is right. They have so much confidence in their government, you know. Sometimes, yeah, okay, let's stop it with this.
Did you think that the peace movement never put any effort into trying to explain why the weapons were there? And you think if they had done, it would have made a lot of difference?
They did, but only, only very small parts within the peace movement would agree with my interpretation,
mm-hmm.
you know? And
yeah.
And to get more people behind the peace movement, and people and verzichten, abandon,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
People didn't stress it out, you know, because then, for example, groups like the Social Democrats or the churches wouldn't agree to that, you know, and then that would split and divide the peace movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so more or less the peace movement was a one-point movement, but say we don't want Pershing to increase missiles.
Mm-hmm.
It was, yeah.
I don't have any quarrel with the peace movement, but I really believe your interpretation is very different from mine of how NATO and Germany got back on its feet. I remember history that when the Russians crossed the Elbe River, they at that time told the Allies, what we, the United States, were not really an ally of Russia. Any time in the Second World War, we gave Russia similar to what we gave to England prior to entering the Second World War, and that was Lend-Lease. We sold them goods and they were to pay for it, and to date they have never paid back. In fact, they haven't even been good enough to tell us to go to hell. They just ignore us. When Russia crossed the Elbe River, it was their intent to rule Europe. in my opinion, and history's opinion, written by certain historians. When Germany gave up in 45, and the Allies shut down, which included France, England, Russia, and the US, Russia at that time had a plan that they were going to have Germany, and they were going to give France back, because France had capitulated in the Second World War. And they were going to let the Frenchmen go home and do whatever they wanted to do. And they were going to give the lowland countries to England and give the U.S. zip, because we hadn't really been damaged. And when the Allies sat down and discussed this, they said, this is not right. And the Russians, at every turn, every single turn, thwarted every effort of the Allies to try to help Europe back on its feet. And when it didn't happen, and Germany couldn't get on its feet, nor Poland couldn't get on its feet economically so they could live, then came the Berlin Airlift. We had to help feed them. And that's, what did we get from Russia? Well, we got a corridor to fly in. It was 20 miles wide. And you got out of the corridor, you were dead. If I call that help, then I'm wrong. They did nothing to help Germany. They did nothing to help Europe. They did everything in the world, in my opinion, to hinder. And then that went on for 10 years, and they had nothing to do but just to raise pain with Europe. Every opportunity, every way. And when NATO come along, Russia voted against. But if NATO is not made up of France, England, and the US, it's made up of 30 countries in Europe. Small, big, little, powers, no money, whatever. And I understand that the NATO isn't the best agreement for Germany. I really understand it, don't get me wrong. But from that time on, the United States and England have poured millions of dollars monthly into the economy of Europe because of NATO. Millions of dollars monthly. And I think that's a turning point, a great turning point. And you said the people ate and got fat. They didn't until after NATO came and they started to get economic money. Now, I understand that you can't negate, unless you want to go to strapping again, an agreement that was made by countries. But I don't understand why the peace movement, if NATO is so bad, why they don't get people elected to governments instead of fighting the governments and work from that angle, work from inside instead of outside. I understand you're trying, but I think it's tough to do anything from the inside, but that's where your strength of any movement is going to come from the inside. I don't know whether you're going to break NATO, whether you're going to break that agreement or not. And I don't know whether it's good or bad you have cruise missiles there. I don't like what we've got in this country. But you're no worse off there than we are here. I think the common enemy for Germany, for France, the world, is a common enemy. How we deal with that common enemy, I don't know. We didn't build a wall and separate Germany. We don't like that wall. We don't like the economic division of Europe, and I'm not speaking just of Germany, but of Europe, but it's there. I think that we've got to look at it and say, the governments outside that were Germany's enemies have probably spent more time than Germany has, building the economy of Germany and Europe back to where it is today, which is better economy than they have ever enjoyed in history. Ever enjoyed. And I think we've got to look at that. And I think that to blast, big or small, NATO, I think is wrong. Really, I do. Yes, you have something you don't like. And yes, you do have a peace movement that's not very successful in getting rid of that. But I think the only way you're really going to overcome it is to work from the inside and not from the outside. I don't think demonstrations are a bit better than all-out warfare, because If you're fighting amongst yourselves, you're fighting amongst the government that's taxing you to fight you, and you're never going to win the battle. Because when they run out of money, they got you to tax again. When you run out of money, you go home.
I agree completely that it would be far better if the peace movement had more influence and that we could elect that majority in government we really want to. But we are not the majority. And, well, where I come from, there's even a minority within the peace movement. And but it's just in the way of what you said, demonstrations and all this stuff is not so good. We should fight from what you call the inside, you know. It's just what you understand by democracy, you know. I would say democracy is not only to vote every 4 years. We are always, every day, responsible persons. We always, every day, should take part in policy and stress our opinion. It's, that is what I understand by democracy, what the Green would call basic democracy. That's the difference between the representative being represented, and then the member of parliament can do more or less what he wants to, or whether he's always forced to do what the people, is he always forced to do what the people tell him to do, you know? There's a close link between the population and their representatives. Otherwise, these representatives forget to represent the people.
Well, I've been in on politics. And I think that you have, it's hard to tell a politician, well, I'm for you. But Friday night, look out, because I'm going out to put up a barricade. I don't think that works. You know, politicians are human, too. You know, they may have thick skin because they got a lot of things thrown at them. But I think what you have to do is to understand their position. A politician's position, a lot of times, is dictated by what some other politician has committed him to 20 years prior. And he can't get out of it. Unless he wants to just wipe the slate clean, and we don't want to do that because that isn't peace anymore. I think that what you have to do is to listen to your politician and have him explain why he's making his action. And not just jump to conclusions, explain why he made that action. And I think most politicians, by and large, really try to work for the general public and general people. But they've been committed in the past, and they can't always do what the public today wants them to do.
I think especially we in Germany should be very, very concerned about what our government has done and is doing. You know, we have, well, not me, but my parents have made the experience with what fascistic governments are going to do. And they came legal to power. And I think we must be very much concerned every day and control them as much as is possible.
I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that at all. But when you demonstrate against your government because of the government policy, that's just tearing the whole situation down another notch. If you would join with them to promote something, then I think both the government and the peace movement would flourish.
But I completely different interests.
Sometimes the movement or what causes the politicians to change their mind.
Politicians sometimes can't change their mind, ma'am, because they've been committed.
Okay, what about Vietnam? The demonstrations certainly influenced policy.
We weren't committed there. No. We had no prior commitment, no written commitment. NATO is a commitment. The prior politicians committed Germany for something about NATO. The politicians that are in office today, unless they have served for the last 30 years, they have that commitment to live by. And if that commitment is a perpetual commitment, they can't break it. If they do break it, the only way to break it is to wipe the slate clean. That's another strike. Now, there must be some way, there must be some way by joining together with your government and the peace movement to change that. Now, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in the probably in the next decade. But it hasn't happened in the past 3 decades by the peace movement. It hasn't happened. Since 55, they've been worried about NATO. It's 86. 31 years, nothing has happened really to change what happened to NATO. Even if it takes 2 decades, it's less time that's been spent in the past. Maybe I'm wrong. I think they could, yes.
I think
how?
That
there, every agreement is written by individuals. And individuals may find a way to convince the other people of NATO to let them out of certain commitments of that in agreement.
But you were saying before that, like with the politicians, they're committed. And so how if the peace movement and the politicians get together, aren't they still committed?
Yeah, they're committed. You've got basically three powers running NATO right now. There are other countries, but basically three powers. I don't see Germany asking England, asking France, and asking the U.S. to reconsider that policy that they made 31 years ago. I don't see that happening.
Unfortunately, I think the German government don't want that to happen. That's the problem. The German government don't, but the German peace movement do.
Well, that may be. What I say, if you work with the government, you may convince them.
I think that's what they may be trying to do.
And the point is that there's still enough people who earn by producing weapons. And they have got a very strong lobby, you know.
I agree with
and
you on that right here.
Yeah, but see, you can't harmonize these different interests. People who earn by producing weapons and people who want to abolish these weapons. They have nothing in common.
That's right. And if that is your steadfast belief, then you better give up your peace movement. There's no hope. If that is your steadfast belief.
I hope. I don't give up. And I think as long...
Well, you're saying that there's no common place here. If that's your steadfast belief, then you're never going to change.
Well, in my opinion, I think we have to put governments under pressure.
Well,
and that we,
that's how it is now, but he hopes that if the lobbying can go on and the pushing and the various kinds of campaigning go on, that eventually you can get to a state where you can change that.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, that's not how it is at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what you're saying, isn't it?
I understand what he's saying, but I don't think maybe I'm making myself clear. If you invite your enemy, which in this case is the peace movement and the government, and the people that want to keep the status quo and the peace movement in Germany, if you invite your enemy to sit down to dinner and you make a friend of him, he's no longer your enemy.
But I think...
They say the police force can't be enough.
Yeah, see, they don't... That's it, you know?
But I think what he's trying to say is work within the system.
You bet.
I have not experienced the peace movement, I have experienced the German government. So I don't know if that's true for Germany. And I don't know if that can be done. But I see that that's what he's trying to say.
Yeah, they want to work within the system, and they're trying to get more people into the system so they can work within it. They're trying very hard for that, you know? They really want to work. They don't just want to demonstrate, but not in getting involved. They're trying very hard to get involved. The people like the Greens are, you know.
Yeah, but it depends. I mean, some parties want to change the business system and some want to change the system.
Yes.
So there are disagreements, again, within the peace movement. And as long as these disagreements are so strong, people won't really get together very, let's say that, very hard or something. Because these disagreements are so strong that you can't really agree to the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying things are too... There's too much even that you couldn't sit down and work together,
people have worked together.
Yeah.
They did for quite a few years, and they still do. I mean, there's still stuff going on. It's probably finished with ADP. It's not so too big and forceful and so famous anymore. But that was always the problem, you know, this like working within the system and changing the system and allowing violent actions to take place, like do something to the trucks carrying the Putins to the country and I don't know what, or like the church group, absolutely no violence at all, you know, and you can't combine it, and that's always the problem, you know.
Yeah.
And you can have big demonstrations, non-violent demonstrations, and well, we had three of them. So, but there have been a lot other smaller actions going on, which were quite different, you know, like church groups doing this, and then
other troops making blockades and having soldiers to police and stuff. But this was very hard to combine.
But right at the moment, I'm understanding you, they've kind of retreated after 1983 and sort of not too much by the
very active at all.
And the group still exists, and on a very low level, they're still working and trying and get to point out their point of view. But if you see, for example, now with the SDI, you know, they hardly have anything to say and to Star Wars and stuff like this, you know, to the new weapon system. And it's so far away from the powerful, powerful influence it once had, you know. If there would be now a demonstration, maybe 50,000. And maybe 50,000 people would take place, but you know, the willing to risk, you know, to take place in these blockades, you know, to be arrested and stuff like this.
You suppose it's because they just decided that they wouldn't do anyway, kind of giving up on
Yeah, they are in parliament.
About 20.
Yeah,
about 20.
And it looks like that in January there are elections again, that it's very probably that they will be in parliament again.
As many or fewer or more?
30. Yeah, and among 500.
30.
Can I say something about working?